The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Traveler, episode 166. Today, the amateur traveler goes to Scotland. We'll be talking about a number of things, including golf and haggis and whiskey. Today, in the amateur traveler. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into today's interview, I actually have a number of news stories. This was a big news-rich week. The first one is there's a new book out by Peter Greenberg that he's getting a lot of flack for because it's about all the places you should not go. The book is called Don't Go There. And as you can imagine, when your favorite location makes that list, there's a little bit of outrage. Then the next story is also controversial, and I'm going to have to say a little sad. Apparently, there is starting to be a tourism industry around suicide in Switzerland. Because it is legal for assisted suicide in Switzerland, there's a story of someone who went to Switzerland to kill themselves. And speaking of controversial, there's a married couple that is suing United because United served them drinks, which led to them becoming drunk and the man beating the wife. So maybe that's something that would be the airline's fault. Or maybe he's an idiot. Among the things you never want to hear your airline pilots say is, "I'm not qualified to land the plane." But a Flybe Airlines flight from Cardiff to Paris had to turn around because of fog at the Charles de Gaulle Airport. The fog didn't close the airport, but the pilot, although he had 30 years' experience, had never completed low-visibility training for that particular aircraft. Ouch. That's something you'd kind of want to know before you get on the flight. And then finally, in the coolest news, and I really mean the coolest news, in Dubai, Palazzo Versace Hotel is building a refrigerated beach. Dubai gets between 40 and 50 degrees centigrade in the summer. It gets very, very warm. And this particular beach will be refrigerated so the guests can walk comfortably across the sand on scorching days. For more information on all of those stories, as well as a number of other ones that I'm skipping, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome Eden to the show. Eden is originally from Edinburgh, be there again this weekend, although currently living in San Diego, to come to talk to us about Scotland. Eden, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing?
So, as we mentioned, you're no longer living in Scotland, but you grew up there and are Scottish.
Very much so, yeah. I've spent my entire life in the pouring rain of Scotland, and here I am, moved to California just to get a suntan for a quick change.
And when we talk about Scotland, as you have friends or relatives who go over to Scotland, what do you recommend they see if they have a week or 2 weeks? What should someone see in Scotland?
I think one of the biggest things that people have to see in Scotland, the trouble with a week's tour, traveling anywhere, as you probably know, is that you try and cram too much in.
Absolutely.
And the one thing about Scotland is that really to integrate yourself into the culture and dynamics of such an incredibly unique country, it's kind of an important thing to spend a little time in certain places. And of course, I think for anyone who visits Scotland, I think the starting point, or indeed the ending point, should always be the capital city of Scotland, which is Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And then from Edinburgh, there are so many regions to see in Scotland. There's the Speyside region, the Highland region, the Island region, the Lowlands, Campbellton, and of course the borders sitting next to a small country called England. Not many people have heard of that.
I've heard of
country.
That, I think. Yeah, okay.
But no, it really is, it's fascinating. The really interesting thing about Scotland as a whole is that it's a very small country. Of course, our population fluctuates around about 5 million. And the fascinating thing about it is between the regions, the dialects change ever so slightly as well. So as you may be able to understand what I'm saying, if you were to drive an hour and 20 minutes to Glasgow, which is on the west coast of Scotland, you would pick up a very different dialect. And even I don't understand what a lot of people in Glasgow say. But Glasgow's a little bit more of an industrial city. Edinburgh's a little bit more cosmopolitan, a little bit more international. And then, of course, when you move your way up into the Highlands of Scotland, you're in for a real dramatic treat because the environment, the geography changes so dramatically. And, of course, every different region in Scotland offers the visitor something very, very uniquely different itself.
Okay. Well, let's start in Edinburgh, since that's where you are recommending we start. First of all, can you say it correctly to make sure that I don't mispronounce it, because I've been known to say it wrong in the past. I say Edinburgh.
Yeah, it's Edinburgh.
Edinburgh.
Okay. Edinburgh. Yeah, Edinburgh.
Okay. And we fly into there, we recover from our jet lag, and then what should we do?
The first thing you should do is make sure you get outside and start breathing some of the amazingly fresh Scottish air, which we're very famous for. Edinburgh is a very, very cosmopolitan city, and in such a small area, there is so much to do. Now, as you come out of your hotel, whichever way you look, you're most likely to get a glimpse of Edinburgh Castle. Mm-hmm. And Edinburgh Castle sits way up on the Esplanade there, and it's absolutely fascinating. A good time of year to go and actually see the city in full vibrant flow would be the Edinburgh International Festival, which happens around August time. And, of course, in August, of course, we have the Edinburgh Military Tattoo, which also happens up on the Esplanade of the castle itself.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, there are so many places to go, so many things to do. Over the last 10 years, Edinburgh has really developed itself. It's actually now one of the most incredibly cosmopolitan cities in Europe. There's a real honeypot from people all around the world who live and work in this city. And of course, the wonderful thing about Scotland, as well as Edinburgh, is hospitality. And wherever you go, you can rest assured you'll be greeted with a smile and hopefully a dram of whiskey in your hand. There's, of course, a bountiful number of bars, which is one of these things we're very famous for. And that's another place you're sure to make friends. That's definite. Of course, if you come down the castle, if you follow the castle, it's an old paving-stoned, cobblestone street. Of course, at the bottom is Holyrood Palace, where, of course, the Queen stays when she comes up to Edinburgh. In between the castle and the Holyrood Palace on that Royal Mile, over the years as a local, I would say it's become a little bit touristy. However, mm-hmm. in saying that, it's actually a bit of a gem of a tourist region because it's not really in your face, as a lot of other cities will throw a lot of tackiness at you. And, of course, Edinburgh's not. It's a very, very refined tourist venue. So, of course, you have the Royal Mile, you have the castle, and then you have the bountiful supply of watering holes and restaurants. And very, very diverse. You have your real Scottish restaurants with real Scottish food. And, of course, you have very, very contemporary bars and restaurants. You know, we even have McDonald's in Edinburgh. So it's one of these things you can't get away from, I guess.
And if we're skipping the McDonald's, are there places that you would recommend among the watering holes or the restaurants? Or
let me start by saying that the diversity of bars in Edinburgh is phenomenal. There are many, many different venues of different styles. A real favorite of mine is a bar called the Barony Bar,
mm-hmm.
and that's on Broughton Street in Edinburgh. That's a real Scottish watering hole. You can take your pick, the World's End on the Royal Mile, Nicol Edwards on Nidri Street in Edinburgh, which is a kind of a traditional Edinburgh bar.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about that one is it's kind of made up with little banqueting halls, and it's very kind of old, cobblestone style. And it actually is one of the things that are most of the bars in and around the castle area are that they're very, very old, so that you basically walk into a block of stone and that's where you can drink your whiskey.
Hmm.
However, if you go into the center of Edinburgh, the main strip, I guess you could say, or the main stretch would be George Street, which is in a completely different league as far as style and contemporary kind of dining out or drinking experiences. That's where you find a lot of the higher end lounges, clubs. My advice would be probably, depending on your age group, but if you're over the age of maybe, I don't know, 40, I'd stay away from the George Street brawl on a Friday, Saturday night, because it's very young, because Edinburgh actually has a very big student population as well. However, for one of the best bar drinking experiences, indeed, I'd say restaurants in a way too, I'd venture away down to the Grass Market area, which is actually just over the other side of the castle, if you're looking at it from Prince's Street, which is the main street, which actually overlooks the castle. So it's kind of over the top of the Royal Mile, and it's called the Grass Market, and that's where some of the oldest bars in Edinburgh remain.
Okay.
And that's a fascinating experience, especially on a Sunday afternoon.
And what else should we see or what else should we do in Edinburgh before we move on to other parts of Scotland?
Well, you know, Edinburgh is also very famous for its underground caves and tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
It would be definitely worth someone maybe taking, if they have the spine for it, to go on maybe a witchery tour, or indeed a tour of the underground caverns, where in the olden days, many hundreds of years ago, there would be families living underneath the ground. So it really is quite fascinating. Of course, you never know, you might bump into a ghost.
Okay.
There is one other thing in Edinburgh you should probably do, and it's called getting a view. Now, you can get a wonderful view from Edinburgh Castle. It gives you almost a 360-degree view over the city. However, one of the most interesting views is actually up on a place called Carlton Hill, and it's actually landmarked. You can see the big, massive columns at the end of Prince's Street, way up on the hill. And if you get up there on a nice, clear day, you get a wonderful view down into the Leith area, which maybe 20 years ago you'd be wiping your feet on the way out. Well, now it's actually very prime real estate. And again, there's some nice bars and hotels and restaurants down there. But if you look towards the castle from the top of Carlton Hill, you get an amazing view of Prince's Street and the Scots Monument. And you really do get an idea just how much history and drama there is in Scottish heritage as well as Edinburgh's.
And where to next? Where after Edinburgh? Should we get in a car? Should we jump on a bus? Or how should we see Scotland too?
Well, that depends on your means and how long you have to spend,
mm-hmm.
to be quite honest with you. My next destination from Edinburgh would have to be the home of golf, St. Andrews. And
okay.
You're looking at maybe an hour and a half drive from Edinburgh, maybe 2 hours, depending on traffic. And that's in the Fife area of Scotland, just across the Forth Road Bridge. And actually, that is a visitor attraction in itself. When you drive over the Forth Road Bridge, if you look to your right, you will see one of the oldest rail bridges in the world, and that's the Forth Rail Bridge. And it really is quite fascinating to see this old structure and how many years ago it was built and how well it's done to stand the test of time. And, it, of course, that gaps the Forth Estuary. And when you get over the other side of the Forth Estuary, you actually land in the Kingdom of Fife. And it's called the Kingdom of Fife because it's actually once where the king actually sat. And it's kind of kept its name, although most people just refer to it as Fife now. It's F-I-F-E. Anyway, if you keep in Fife and you follow the signs to St. Andrews, eventually you'll come to the home of golf. And if you have your golf clubs in the back of your car, then you probably won't leave. It's one of these places that, for the golf fanatic, is like a mecca. And actually, there's more golf courses in that St. Andrews region than there are pretty much in the rest of the country. They've developed quite a lot of them, but there are some incredibly stunning ones. And if you can't get on to the old course, because it is very hard to get on to the original home of golf, on a Sunday afternoon, a little bit of a secret for you, the golf course is actually closed to golfers and open to the public. And you can actually walk across it. So there's a little bit of local knowledge for you. Always worth remembering on a Sunday. Go to St. Andrews for Sunday lunch and then take a walk over the oldest golf course in the world. It really is beautiful. And if you get it on a nice day, then you might keep your hat on.
And is there any trick if someone really were an avid golfer and they wanted to play St. Andrews, I assume book well in advance, and you can do that remotely or...
You know, getting on the old course at St. Andrews is very tricky. It's notoriously tricky. If your hotel has the capability and the means, they can certainly assist you in doing that.
Okay.
If you're there as a free entity, what you're going to have to do is edit your name into a ballot, which is drawn every morning, and that's when you'll find out if you can actually play the course or not.
Interesting.
And
okay.
Also, you have to have a certificate from your home golf course. I think it has to be PGA approved as well, that your handicap is less than 18.
Ah. That's not per hole, I suppose. That would rule me out,
no,
I think, at that point.
Not okay. Per hole, no. Seeing your handicaps, your golf clubs will not get you on the course.
Okay.
That's for sure.
I think that pretty much rules me out there. Okay. And we've done our golfing. We've been to Edinburgh. Weather next?
Well, then I would suggest you take a trip up north into Perthshire. And Perthshire is an incredibly beautiful place. It really is wonderful. That's when you start seeing a little bit more of the Scottish castles, because castles start popping up all over the place when you're driving up through Perthshire. And if you want to have a stop for lunch, the town of Perth is quite a nice place to go. And you go through Perth and up north, and then you start getting to the realms of where places like J.K. Rowling has a home, Blair Athol, the castle. Mm-hmm. The chap used to have his own private army until very recently. I use that in inverted commas. That's when you also start to see these wonderful old bridges, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years old. You drive over these bridges, and you'll see these wonderful fast-flowing rivers, and this where the scenery starts to get a little bit more dramatic up there. But one of the places I would say to stop up in Perthshire would be Blair Athol, and that's actually a really nice kind of place to visit. But there are so many places up there. I think the best thing for anyone to do would be just to stop every 5 minutes, and you'll see something new.
And we're still in the lowlands at this point.
No, you're venturing up north now. You're actually venturing into the Highlands.
Into the Highlands. Okay, I wasn't sure whether we were there yet or not. So this is the transition into the Highlands.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
If you're heading up towards the Highlands through Perthshire in the region of Speyside, this is the region where I suggest that you put your drinking cap on and start to explore some of the wonderful things that Scotland have given the world. Of course, Scotland's famous for inventing the game of golf. John Logie Baird, who invented the television set, and Alexander Graham Bell, who invented the telephone. But there's also one other thing we invented, which this Speyside region is very famous for, and that, of course, is whiskey. And there are such a variety of whiskey distilleries, and it's also part of the whiskey tour. Now, before you come to Scotland, if you want to do some research, you can actually look up the Whiskey Trail, and actually it gives you a line and directions to each distillery in the Speyside region and slightly beyond as well. But, of course, I'm very proud. I am ambassador for a single malt whiskey called Macallan. And Macallan is actually in the Speyside region. And the Speyside region is actually home to almost over 50% of all the Scottish whiskey distilleries. And its environment is absolutely stunning to see these different distilleries and the difference in the aesthetics and, of course, the difference in the dram as well. And that's a good area to stop at a local bar and check out, see how many different varieties of single malt whiskey they have, because it can get pretty fascinating. None more so than the Craigellachie Hotel in Speyside, which is opposite the entrance to the Macallan Distillery. And the Craigellachie Hotel has, I couldn't even name how many wonderful and exclusively rare and precious single malt whiskies that you can taste.
So it sounds like there's a number of local distilleries that don't actually export.
There are distilleries that do not export. There are also distilleries that do not run all year long as well. There's a number of smaller distilleries that don't work on a full-time basis. I think for anyone just to get in a car and drive up there, every 10 minutes you will see a sign pointing you in the direction of one distillery or the other. So there's certainly plenty of distilleries, and for those of you people who are actually interested in the whiskey-making process, you can actually also visit a cooperage up in Speyside where they make some of the casks for some of the distilleries. So it really is a fascinating, indulgent experience into the world of whiskey up in Speyside, because that's really where the industry's heartbeat lies.
And since we're telling people to get in the car and drive to distilleries, is this something we could also get to on public transportation, or...?
No, well, yes, there is, but it's very difficult. The public transportation in the north, and that's middle to north area of Scotland, isn't quite as regular as in the city, for example. However, that's not to say that you cannot pre-plan, and if you go online and, for example, visit Scotland or many of the touring websites will point you in the right direction. And that's actually one thing to note. If this touring the whiskey distilleries was actually of real interest to you, then my advice on that part would be to get yourself, and I don't know if you're in a group of 5, 6, 10 plus, get yourself onto a whiskey trail tour where you will actually be driven up into the whiskey distilleries and actually be given a real tour of local knowledge of the area. And of course, that means that you can sample a few more than you would do if you were driving a car.
Okay. All right.
From there, of course, people like to dive into the Highlands of Scotland. And of course, they are the images that most people relate to on the picture postcard, with the majestic scenery, awesome wild places, I mean, towering mountains, and of course, these wonderfully big expanses of shimming lochs, and of course, fields and fields and fields of heather. The film Braveheart tries as best as it can, although our Scottishman was played by an Australian actor, but it tries its best to kind of reincarnate some of that wonderful ruggedness. And the Highlands of Scotland are very much a place to be driven or drive through and just take lots of pictures, because it really is quite stunningly remote. So it's quite fascinating.
Now, I notice we're also skipping some places. You're making choices here of what to recommend, and you're skipping some of the regular touristy spots like Loch Ness, for instance. Just too touristy?
I'm taking up the west coast of Scotland, and if you're doing the tour, you might want to pop down the east coast of Scotland, which, of course, is closer to where Loch Ness is.
Okay. And that would also then take us closer to Glasgow.
And that would take you down through Ayrshire into Glasgow, yes.
Okay. Which, as we said, is more industrial. So if we had to choose between Glasgow and Edinburgh, you're really going to recommend Edinburgh.
In no bias shape whatsoever, I would say Edinburgh would be the place to be.
Okay.
Glasgow is a little bit more industrial. However, Glasgow is a very beautiful city as well, and just as hospitable. But I think for the whole experience, that is a little bit more walkable and a little bit more closely knit together, I think Edinburgh is your place. Because actually, Edinburgh is a place you can walk from one end to the other, north, east, south, and west.
When I come to Scotland, we share a common language, although we can't always understand each other. What's going to surprise me?
I think you'd be surprised by the hospitality.
Okay.
The level of hospitality in Scotland is really phenomenal. I think you'd also be surprised that we do actually get the odd sunny day. So if you're lucky, that'll surprise you the most. Coming to Edinburgh, the fact that you can literally walk around everywhere would surprise a lot of people, because any city that I've ever been in, it's really not something feasible. And in Edinburgh, you can do that. And the one thing that will knock your socks off when it comes to Scotland, as far as a surprise is concerned, is the serious, massive differences within 5 miles, within 10 miles, within 20 miles. The world's just changed so very, very dramatically, and it's a real feast for a camera.
One warning you would give, something I should know before I go to Scotland.
Oh, that's a good one.
Like what's in haggis or something like that.
I would make sure that you check your currency exchange rates very carefully. I would only do those at well-known banks or exchange facilities. I think just like in any other city, it's one of the sad things that tourists have to go through, is that they last minute want to change currency and they end up getting ripped off in some capacity, which of course is not something associated with Scotland, but it's just a general advice for traveling. And of course, Scotland is a little bit more expensive with the exchange rate from the United States here.
Sure.
So
don't
be too surprised if you have an $8 beer. Just take your time and enjoy it longer. Now, the other thing I would say to be careful with, like any other city, do your research. Be careful where you go. If you're going up into the Highlands and if you're going hill trekking or walking, make sure you take the precautions to be well facilitated. Make sure people know where you're going. Many a Scotsman has been lost up in the Highlands of Scotland, so I'm sure many an American would find that a task. So I'd say wherever you go, just make sure you do your research and know where you're going and take it from there, and you'll have a blast.
Here's a sentence I'd like you to finish.
Sure.
You really know you're in Scotland when...
Well, you really know you're in Scotland when the end of your nose is glowing red, you've got a glass of whiskey in your hand, you're smiling and joking with 500 people that you've never met before, and you're all of a sudden wearing a skirt.
Okay. The best day you've ever had in Scotland?
the best day I've ever had in Scotland, and I will have again very shortly, is the Scottish Hogmanay. And, of course, Hogmanay is New Year. And if you look at your worldwide star ratings, Edinburgh in Scotland is called the number one place to go for New Year. Let me tell you something about this. It was my first big event, and I was down in the Prince's Gardens, which are then a big area of beautifully landscaped gardens that sit right below the castle. And we're sitting at this beautiful pavilion, and right at the midnight, the fireworks go off. There's 300,000 people lining the streets. Everybody is cheering. The bagpipes are going. The fireworks are in the air, and it will raise the hair on the back of your neck. So my advice to anyone, if you really do want something very, very spiritually special, celebrate Hogmanay in Scotland, and most of all, Hogmanay in Edinburgh.
You mentioned food. We talked about it just a little briefly, talking about a couple restaurants in Edinburgh. Scottish food doesn't perhaps have the best reputation. Most people immediately think of haggis, which I think isn't actually legal to import into the U.S. What do you recommend for the visitor, the person who didn't grow up in Scotland? What should I try when I go there? Don't leave Scotland until you've had the...
Don't leave Scotland until you've tried everything. Because at the end of the day, when you're sitting in your rocking chair and you're 105 years old and all you can eat is milk, you'll be wondering why you didn't try something that is of a culture and something that millions of people are quite comfortable with. So do not be afraid at all. Now, haggis is one of these foods of Scotland which has kind of made its own legendary stories. And, of course, we have stories about people actually catching a haggis. And then, of course, you have stories about what's actually in a haggis. And I will tell you right now that nowadays it's not quite like the olden days. It's not quite like the olden days of any country. I'm sure there are many, many foods here in the United States that are not really allowed to be eaten anymore. So, but haggis, it's a very, very good for you food.
And we should mention there might be somebody who doesn't know what haggis is.
Oh, okay. Well, haggis is effectively ground up lamb and oats and a few other spicy things that have been thrown in the bag.
Where the bag traditionally was the stomach of the lamb, so.
Yeah, traditionally, and on Burns Night, of course. On Burns Night, we celebrate that by cutting a stomach of a lamb, which is full with haggis. But, of course, we don't really do that anymore. The haggis is Scotland's best-known delicacy, and actually, it's very nice stuff. There's a lot of people get put off for the first time, but it's made from, effectively, in the traditional way, it's made from sheep's offal, the windpipe, lungs, heart, and liver of the sheep. And, of course, they're minced up and then adds oatmeal to that. And then, of course, traditionally, again, I say again, traditionally, not quite the way it's always made now, is placed inside a sheep's stomach, which is sewn closed. And, of course, it's cooked for several hours and boiled for several hours until it's ready to be eaten. But don't let that put you off, because it's a little bit of a folklore, as it were, that all haggis is made the same way nowadays.
Okay.
If you want a really good food, if you find yourself in the town of Arbroath, I don't know if many people have fish in the morning for breakfast, but in Scotland, it's a little bit of an old tradition to have haddock, smoked haddock. And Arbroath is very famous for that because it has the Arbroath smoky. And it's actually the smoked haddock. It's smoked in small houses in, of course, the town of Arbroath, which is fascinating. Oatcakes, and of course, we even have it over in the United States, is Walker's shortbread. That's a fantastic shortbread. It's a wonderful product. Scottish beef, I have to say, I'm sorry, but Montana and South Dakota have nothing on Scottish beef. Scottish beef, to me, will always be the best.
Okay.
And you cannot beat a Scottish roast dinner with Yorkshire puddings and gravy on a Sunday afternoon. Of course, Scottish salmon. I mean, how can you forget Scottish salmon?
I don't actually think of salmon when I think of Scotland, so okay, interesting.
Yeah, but actually, you know what? If you're on the road and you need to stop at a little bakery, we have several loads of bakeries in every little town. If you go into a bakery, order yourself a Scotch pie, and it's really one of the most fantastic things. It's a pastry crust, and it's filled with mincemeat, and it really, really is fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And my advice would be to add a little bit of mango chutney on the top. Snarf it down with a nice pint of Scottish ale.
Any last words of wisdom before we head off to Scotland?
My last words of wisdom before you pack your bags is to do a little bit of research about the weather. Now, the one thing that Scotland's very famous for is the term four seasons in one day. If you're really lucky, you'll have four seasons in one day as just opposed to the one. But make sure that you do have appropriate clothing, especially if you're going up in the highlands, because it notoriously gets a little bit wetter and a little bit damper up there. However, during the summer, I've been on week tours around Scotland, and I've had nothing but sunshine. So it really is a gamble, actually. It's one of the fun things about Scotland. You never really know what you're going to expect. Again, if you find yourself in a damp area and you don't have the right clothes, you're probably going to get a cold. A perfect excuse for you to try a Scottish hot toddy, which is effectively a teaspoonful of sugar and a teaspoon of Scotch honey and, of course, a dram of Scotch whiskey. And if you want a really good hot toddy, make sure it's Macallan.
It's last words here. If you had to summarize Scotland in three words, what three words would you use?
Absolutely fascinating. Always. absolutely fascinating every day. I think that would be a better one. Absolutely fascinating every day.
Eden, thank you so much for coming on the show and telling us a little bit about your home country and sharing with us some ideas of what to do when we go there.
My pleasure. Travel safe to Scotland.
I have one internet resource for you today, and that is a new travel aggregation site, specifically a hotel aggregator called Hotels Combined at hotelscombined.com. And what an aggregator site is, for those of you who are not familiar, is you can take one search, in this case for a specific hotel, and make it on a number of sites simultaneously. In this case, you can go to this one site and it will search Priceline and Hotels.com and Travelocity and Venere and a number of other different sites. So check that out, HotelsCombined.com. Kathleen sent me an email, which was a call for help. She says, I'm stuck with a plane ticket decision. We are traveling around the world for a year. Would you recommend buying tickets individually or booking them through air brokers? And I gave her some recommendations based on what I'd heard, but if you have personal experience traveling around the world and have some advice, let me know. I'd love to pass that along to Kathleen. I just got the first entry for that contest that we're having here in January, which is write me a blog post about your favorite city to win a book about Mexico City, and also, obviously, fame and fortune. Well, fame, possibly, or a little bit of fame. And Brett from Amtrekker has sent me the first entry about his city, Boston. I'll put that up here probably by the time you hear this. That'll already be up on the blog. And I'll put a link in the show notes for this show for Brett's blog at Amtrekker.com. With that, we'll bring this episode of The Amateur Traveler to a close. Look forward to hearing from you in comments, in email, or a blog post about your favorite city. As always, thanks so much for listening.
I got to see one more of these.